Where were you? Where are you? And where are you going? Those are three questions I'd like to share some thoughts on this morning as we gather on this 10th anniversary of 9/11, September 11th, 2001. Where were you? Where are you? And where are you going? It seems there's a certain part of us, whenever there's some historic event that happens in our lives, we remember where we were when we heard about it or discovered it. And there seems to be some kind of a process we go through of needing to share a bit of that. Those of you who would remember Pearl Harbor, if we were to say, you know, where were you that day, many of you could share your memory of that. For my generation, one of those moments is, where were you when John F. Kennedy was assassinated? I remember that as a little boy. It's etched in my mind where I was and what I was doing that afternoon. And on this 10th anniversary of 9/11, many people are asking each other those kinds of questions. You know, where were you? Where were you that day? I'd like to share a little bit of some thoughts I have today on that, not as a way to reminisce, but I think that there's something in us, something I think of healing and searching for meaning that we find in telling that story again and again. And as we become more distant from that in time, perhaps we try to discover more and more meaning as we grow, as we go along and grow in our lives, but go back to discover the meaning. I was pulling out of a SunTrust bank in Apex. I live in Apex and had made a deposit at the bank, and I was pulling out of the parking lot onto the main street of Apex when the radio mentioned that a plane had struck one of the towers, the Twin Towers in New York City. And it immediately struck me. It struck us in many different ways. Of course, at that point, we didn't really know what was happening. I knew the Twin Towers. They were a part of my life, having come from New York. I remember growing up, I think I was in high school at the time, they actually built the Twin Towers. And there was controversy in the building of those towers. Those 16 acres, that was a neighborhood. There were stores and businesses and people living there. And I remember they're clearing that out to build these towers. And that caused some controversy. And then when the towers were built, they stood so tall, the tallest buildings in the world at the time. And New Yorkers, I remember first looking at them saying, it's not the Empire State Building. New Yorkers can be tough, but they can also be incredible. Eventually, the New Yorkers embraced the Twin Towers, became part of the life of New York City, became part of the life of our country. It became a place of business, a place of enterprise, a place of headquarters for so many companies, a place of work and employment for so many people. It became part of the skyline of New York City. You could hardly think of the skyline without those Twin Towers. I'd been there many times in my life. And my wife Mary and I and my two daughters, Elizabeth and Rebecca, had gone there and went up to that top floor, that observation tower, and you could just look out and see for miles. You could see the far reaches of New Jersey. You could see all the way upstate into New York. You could see Long Island. You could see New York Harbor. It also wasn't unusual to see some planes flying below you, because as you stood in that tower, there was Newark Airport, JFK Airport, LaGuardia Airport. It still amazes me to this day that those airports are able to coordinate all those flights. So it wasn't unusual to look out and see a plane actually flying lower than you were. And so that struck me when I heard of a plane hitting the World Trade Center. I thought some accident had happened and how sad and tragic that could be. But as the day began to progress, as the hours progressed, I arrived here at the office and the second tower had been struck. We eventually heard that the Pentagon had been struck as well by a plane. And then we heard about the heroism of those on that plane that crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. We didn't know what was happening that day. Things were evolving. And as the hours and the days and the weeks progressed, we knew the dark evil that had happened that day. Just a darkness. And we became vulnerable. In a sense, it was like our hearts were ripped open. We were a vulnerable people, and it was scary. It created fear. It created apprehension about what this meant. Where were we going? What was happening? A few weeks later, I had a chance, again, with my wife Mary and my two daughters, Elizabeth and Rebecca, to go to New York. I remember our apprehension on even getting on the plane to fly to New York at that time, only a few weeks later, but we did because New York was ours and no one was going to take it away from us. And we got on the plane, flew to New York, and one of the things we did while we were there, besides we were going up to visit my family, but we went to Ground Zero. And I'll never forget standing there, never forget the sight, never forget the sound, never forget the smell of that day. The buildings were still standing, as you see the day they had collapsed. There was still smoke smoldering from the ruins. And we stood there in silence. One of the few times I've been in New York and heard silence. And we stood at St. Paul's Chapel in New York. St. Paul's Chapel is an Episcopal church that has been there since the 1700s. It's a church that was built by Trinity Church Wall Street. Trinity Church Wall Street was built a long time ago and was the first Episcopal church in New York. It was once the tallest building in Manhattan. And it stood on Wall Street. Some of you may not realize that the reason Wall Street was called Wall Street is because there was once a wall there that went along that area. And it was defining the northern part of New York City, what was then New York City. Beyond that wall were woods and forests and meadows and kind of an unknown area. And the wall kind of was the northern limit of that. People began to go beyond that wall, begin to settle down and create farms and different kinds of things. And what Trinity Church did was build St. Paul's Chapel. In those days, it was called a chapel of ease. That's a phrase you don't hear anymore. A chapel of ease. Trinity Church built St. Paul's Chapel as a place for those who lived beyond the wall, for those who were venturing out to come to church on Sundays when they couldn't make it to Trinity. St. Paul's was built for that purpose. Now you can walk from one to the other in about 15 minutes, but it was a different time then. St. Paul's Chapel is located right at almost the base of the Twin Towers. If you were to look at our church here and look at the apartments on the other end of our parking area, that's about the distance of St. Paul's Chapel from the Twin Towers. And when those towers collapsed, what's amazing is not one window, not one brick, nothing was destroyed in St. Paul's Chapel. It's an absolutely amazing story. And as I shared with you in a letter I sent out to the parish, and I think in my newsletter article, a couple of days after that area opened up again, the doors of St. Paul's Chapel were open, and people began to appear there. First responders, of course, were already there. Someone showed up with a grill and started cooking hot dogs and hamburgers. A few other people showed up with grills, cooking hot dogs and hamburgers, began feeding the first responders who were there around the clock. And so many came together to be there. Interestingly, eventually the Department of Health condemned that. You can't do that anymore. But other food began to come in, restaurants, hotels. There were truckloads from the Waldorf Astoria coming down to St. Paul's and giving food to feed the first responders. The response of those first responders and those all around showed the diversity not only of those responding, but the diversity of those who were killed that day. Remember, those who were killed that day were a diverse group. Christians, Muslims, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, agnostics, atheists, across the spectrum. Different cultures, different socioeconomic levels. Many were killed that day. And the response was of the same kind. The diversity of those who came forward was across the spectrum of politics, of economy, of religion, of faith. People came together. The heroic in people came forward. You could go into St. Paul's Chapel, and what happened there is those first responders began to use the inside of the church almost as a place to live. Inside of that church, all the pews that were there were dusted. And that dust was treated with the greatest of respect. Because that dust was not just the dust of papers and buildings, but it was the dust of those who lost their lives. And there was great honor and respect paid to that dust. And the first responders, the firefighters, the EMS, the police officers, all those who were there, began to sleep in those pews. They would come in after a 12-hour shift, get some food, sleep in the pews, get up the next day and go back, as they began to call it, the pile. And in that church, you could find people, therapists, counselors, clergy, people just there to listen, people to help. There were physicians and doctors. You could look at the over in the corner of St. Paul's Chapel, there's this little box area. It marks the place where George Washington worshipped at St. Paul's Chapel when he was first president. Remember, the president lived in New York at that time. That's where he would worship. And there's a plaque on the wall saying this is where George Washington worshipped from. It's always treated with great respect and history in St. Paul's Chapel. But if you were to be there that time, and we were there, you could look over and you would see it was a place where the podiatrists had decided to work from. There were foot massage therapists, podiatrists working in that box, and the firefighters would come in around the clock, sit in George Washington's seat, and put their boots up, pull their boots off, and have their feet treated. Working 10, 12 hours a day on a pile that was continually emanating heat. Little did they realize the damage that was being done to their feet, and that St. Paul's Chapel became a place for that as well. Just an incredible experience. St. Paul's Chapel was this example of diverse people just coming together. Also, one other story to share with you that day is the evacuation by boats from Lower Manhattan. Go on to YouTube and write in boatlift 9/11. Boatlift 9/11, and see an incredible 11-minute story about the evacuation of people from Manhattan. Manhattan is an island. All the bridges were shut down, the tunnels were shut down, all the transportation was shut down, and people were looking for their lives, jumping into the water to get away. And boats started arriving. It's been told that that day, when in 9 hours, 500,000 people were evacuated from Manhattan. 500,000 people. It's the largest water evacuation in history. And the boats that were doing it were people who owned boats, people who had fishing boats, people who ran ferries, people who ran tourist boats. The call went out for boats, and boats just arrived. Stories being told of just simple people saying, I had to do what I had to do. I had to help people. And they reached out. Incredible experience. Incredible experience. So when I look back at where were you, it was an incredible time. It was one of the most horrible of times, but it was also one of the most wondrous of times. As people came together, diverse as they were, and brought out the heroic in each of us. Where are you now? I don't know about you. I've been struggling with what to share today. And when I think of the question of where are you now, where are we now, it just seems we've lost some of that. When I look back and see the diversity of people coming together to work together, to reach out to each other and make a difference, it seems today that our diversity is separating us, making us unable to hear each other and talk to each other and listen to each other. Reconciliation was happening even then, I believe, as people began to open their hearts to the other and be with people they may not have agreed with or saw things the same way, but they shared something. They listened to each other. They had meals together. They slept in pews. They sat out on street corners eating food together. They rescued people. They did wondrous things. It just seems today that we've become so divided. Church has become divided. Controversies within the Episcopal Church were... people separate from each other. Within Christianity, there are divisions between liberals and conservatives, progressives and reactionaries. There's tension in our culture. There's tension in our politics. We can't even be in the same room as Americans and work together to shape new meaning and new possibilities. I get very... Now, you may say, George, you're being very pessimistic. I don't know, but I just feel that we've lost something of, I think, what we had. And what I saw, they were ordinary people. People that I grew up with in my neighborhood doing incredible things. And I wish we could regain some of that. And so when I look to where are we going, where are we going? I just hope that we do keep going. Because where we are needs a lot of healing, a lot of reconciliation, and an awful lot of work. You know, Bishop Curry uses the phrase, where we're going, I think, is living into the dream and the vision of God and stepping away from the nightmare that we live in and keeping that dream and that hope before us as a people of God. Maybe we're not there yet. Maybe there's still a lot of healing and reconciliation that needs to take place in our lives. But to keep that hope out there, to keep that dream out there, I think is so important to all of us. And I find, in some strange way, my way of moving forward is to reflect and remember where I was. Mary and I will be celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary in a few weeks, and I'm taking some time off, and we're going to go to New York, go to Manhattan. It's a place for us to go, and we hope to go to Ground Zero and go to that reflection pool that's been built and just be there once again in the silence. And I hope to regain some of the incredible things that we saw that day, to hear them again and relive them again and to bring them forward into my present life and to the future that we hope to live into. So as we gather together today, let us share where we were. Share where you think we are. Maybe you have a different perspective. And where are we going? Where are we going? That, to me, is the invitation this day provides us. And as we prepare to celebrate our parish picnic under the tent or in the parish hall, again, eating hot dogs and hamburgers, gathering together in a simple way, sharing our lives, sharing our stories, sharing our hopes, sharing our dreams, and believing that we can be a people of reconciliation, a people of healing. We heard it in our gospel reading today. Our readings are pretty challenging for today. How often must I forgive? 70 times, 7 times, 77 times. We may not be ready for that right now, but that's part of the dream. That's part of the hope. That's part of the vision that we hope to live into in our lives. Let us continue the journey, continue the walk, continuing to hear each other in the midst of our diversity, no matter what our spiritual journey is defined as, no matter what languages we speak, no matter what our politics, let us be a hope for the future. And listen to each other and open our lives to each other to truly experience forgiveness and reconciliation and hope and healing in our lives.